Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. The people behind Baby First TV and So Yummy are now in the lifestyle channel biz. Emphasis on decor, fashion, and do-it-yourself advancements. Blossom is the name, and Roku is running the network. First Media President Sharon Richter joins me next. In 1980, an attempt to rescue Americans held hostage in Iran failed. Desert One is a new documentary on that attempt, running Sunday night on the History Channel. In our next half hour, we'll connect with producer, director, and two-time Oscar-winning filmmaker Barbara Kopple, and we have a special guest along for that ride. A pair of detectives learn to get along and sharpen their crime-busting smarts on Pretty Hard Cases, the new drama series launched earlier today on IMDb.tv. Co-creators and showrunners Sherry White and Tassie Cameron come on next hour. Also ahead, Apple TV Plus's 2022, our classic trivia question, and honoring a pair of Michaels. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio. I'm presented on Amazon Music, the iRadio Podcast Network, Verbal, Reason FM, and Apple Podcasts. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. 74 degrees, top of the hour in New York, and as we get ready to honor the people that fell 9/11 20 years ago, we welcome you to this special edition of the program all about TV's current and future. We think we have a blockbuster 90 minutes in store for you. You can get right to it, and we invite you to get right to it with us. If you have a question or comment for any of our guests, phone it in at 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. Chat room is open as well. SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. While the promo is on the air, you can connect with others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions. Let people be live with you. Sharon Rick from First Media live with us from L.A. after these news notes. Look for Apple TV Plus to have a wider, far wider amount of original content playing there in year three, which begins in 2 months. According to the popular web journal The Information, Apple TV Plus will premiere at least one new series or movie all next year, and that's more than double the current annual pace of first-run launches. What's more, Apple plans to spend upwards of $500 million on Apple TV Plus marketing in 2022. Nickelodeon overseer Brian Robbins is set to become chief executive of another Viacom CBS organization, Paramount Pictures. Current Paramount chairman and CEO Jim Giannopoulos, who is holding both roles since 2017, is wrapping up his tenure for parts unknown, according to The Hollywood Reporter. Robbins is expected to, in the near term, maintain his Nickelodeon oversight role, and there's no current yet or comment yet on these developments from Viacom CBS. And as for Nickelodeon, the weekly NFL Slime Time highlights program will debut next Wednesday night. The program, which has the league's seal of approval, is an outgrowth of the channel's successful wildcard playoff game this past January, which won a Sports Emmy nomination. NFL Today and new CBS Mornings co-host Nate Burleson, who provided analysis on the wildcard game, will host Slime Time. He'll be joined as a co-host by Young Dylan of the popular Tyler Perry-produced Nickelodeon series, and Dylan Scheffler, that's the daughter of NFL analyst for ESPN Aaron Scheffler, as Adam Scheffler's correspondent. Nick will run episodes at 7 p.m. Eastern time and wrap the season next year with yet another wild card contest, complete with slime. Now some quickies. Real Time with Bill Maher will remain on HBO through 2024. Season 2 of Pentified begins play on Netflix November 10th. 14 Halloween-oriented series and specials will play on HGTV, Travel Channel, and Food Network under the Ghosttober banner. They'll also be presented on Discovery Plus. And MTV's annual Video Music Awards show is a go for Sunday with a live audience and live from the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, 8 p.m. Eastern time, and it will be simulcast on other Viacom cable channels and on the CW. And that is news notes for today. Now joining us live from Los Angeles, we've had her on the program a number of times before. She is the co-founder and president of First Media, the folks behind Baby First, So Yummy, and Now Blossom, Sharon Richter. Sharon, welcome in.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me again. I'm so excited to be here.
It's a pleasure. Last time out, earlier this year, we talked about So Yummy. Now let's talk about Blossom. Tell us about how this network came about.
So Blossom is based on our number one in the world, most successful do-it-yourself and lifestyle social media page. Blossom is number one in the world in views per post. Our average post there, we do 79 million views, and number one in the world in share rate and engagement. And based on the success that we have seen with taking our previous brand, So Yummy, from social to all the new TV platforms, we are now doing exactly the same with Blossom. We see that our viewers want to engage even further with the brand. They want more than 3 minute pieces of content. They want to dig deeper, and they even want to get the products that they see on our videos and actually do these things themselves and learn how to do it. So now, after launching So Yummy and seeing that the model works, that the new platforms can actually generate significant revenue that can support high quality programming, we're all in.
When we talk do-it-yourself, how is what you're doing with Blossom in that category similar or different to what DIY Network is doing now?
So every piece of content coming from First Media, if it's So Yummy, if it's Blossom, if it's Blusher, really starts from, if you look at me, my imperfection glows. And like many millennials, I no longer want to learn how to crochet for 5 hours. I don't have the time, and maybe not even the attention span. So what we look for at every piece of content that comes from us is providing our viewers more value for their money, save them time, save them the hustle, and make them look great in front of their family and friends in an easy, easy, super way. And that's what Blossom does. It makes you the hero and allows you to take your creativity to the next level. And we do it in all aspects. It's not just do-it-yourself. It's also lifestyle hacks and anything that could make you your own hero and inspire. And what's unique, and if you know, and where we're heading, if you look at what we've done with So Yummy, it can maybe give you a clue. It's the do-it-yourself channel for the TikTokers. It's the do-it-yourself for the Instagram generation. And that's very different than what you see on other food network and on other do-it-yourself networks. Maybe call us the bad boy. But we also add, and intend to add on Blossom too, as we've done on So Yummy, an additional layer of convenience for our viewers. So if you looked at the Unbox show that we launched on So Yummy about 6 months ago, it was a great reality show. Three TikTokers get a mystery box. They have to make a dinner in an hour based on a theme that they got with ingredients on the mystery box. Super cool personalities, very different. But hey, you know what? If you really like the recipe they came up with, you can text us and we'll ship all those ingredients to you. And if you like the shirt they're wearing, well, text us the name of the influencer and we'll get it for you. So we think that new platforms and fast networks actually allow for interesting content that allows a new way of engagement, a deeper engagement, and potentially new revenue streams.
Blossom is the new network from First Media, that's Sharon Victor's company, and that service is now playing on the Roku channel, part of Roku, of course, and other smart TV sets and devices to come. We'll talk about how fast those devices will get that service and other things from First Media not too far from now. Sharon joins us from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. We're just getting started here with today's episode of the program about TV's current and future, and happy you are along for the ride. Simon Adler with you live from New York, 74 degrees at the top of the hour, and this day before we mark the 20th anniversary of 9/11 with all sorts of events here in the Big Apple. And if you have a question or comment for Sharon, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we have another return engagement, this one from executive producer Patrick Day Duty. He is with Nailed It, the very popular Netflix competition series hosted by Nicole Byer that begins its sixth season next week. We may have another guest also for you as well on Monday. And stay tuned, we've got information later this half hour about another big blockbuster 90 minutes coming 1 week from today. We have not one, not two, but three Internet Radio exclusive interviews. It's an episode you will not want to miss. We'll tell you all about it coming up in the next few minutes. Sharon, as mentioned, you're now with Blossom on the Roku channel, on Roku. How soon will it run on other smart TV sets and devices?
So we expect to announce some big announcements for Blossom in the very, very near future. I will say this year, in the next couple of months, and grow it. Providers who have launched Baby First, you know, which is now in 60 million homes, and So Yummy, which is now in 40 million homes, see that First Media is in a unique position where we understand both short form and long form, and we know how to drive an audience to watch it. So They seem excited to carry us, and we're excited because, you know, it took us a while to join the game because we wanted to make sure that there was enough eyeballs, enough revenue to justify creating really good quality content. And now we feel it's there, and we're eager to be all in.
You mentioned that part of Blossom's credo is to reach out to the TikTok generation. What are they telling you about what they're interested in? How do you reach out to them? What have you learned in terms of production techniques or subject matter with getting Blossom out the door that suggests this is how you do it? This is how you reach a new TV generation that right now sees TikTok as their avenue to success.
So it's really odd. It's really interesting because they're different in their viewing habits. For example, they tend to watch a lot on their phone, and attention spam, you know, they're expecting gratification a lot faster. So both in the way we create the content, but also in the projects that we actually do. So no longer how do I make, if I'm taking a So Yummy analogy, beef bourguignon in 3 hours, but rather how do I get a store-bought cake because I can get a really cost-effective good one and make it look fabulous in 30 minutes or less. And we see more and more of that we're creating, and interesting combinations and interesting personalities that are giving unique and diverse perspectives. So what you will see on Blossom is a lot more diversity in what you'd expect to see in traditional do-it-yourself networks, a lot more diversity of the kind of content and also the personalities on the network. You will see that, for example, we are combining unexpected features. So music and do-it-yourself, or cooking and do-it-yourself, going along way beyond the traditional and also creating trends. An additional important part is we don't see platforms as standalone. We look at our brands as holistic brands who will appear wherever you are, whenever you are. So if you saw a great do-it-yourself project or a life hack available on TikTok coming from Blossom or on Facebook or on YouTube, and you really want to learn how to do it, we'll drive you to the network. And I think part of the magic that we deliver is we don't just deliver great content. We actually deliver the marketing built in. The audience already follows us on the unique long-form content available now on Blossom and Rocco and other platforms is that you get a deeper engagement. And the audience is digging it.
How do you incorporate music into the program?
So we're bringing, for example, when we're looking at talent, and a good way to look at it is again, the Unboxed show that we recently launched because that's fairly new, and Blossom will bring shows similar to it, is we're bringing TikTokers who are musicians, and they incorporate their music into their cooking. So you will see similar things in the do-it-yourself world. It's not just about listening to music. It's about the personalities and the combination of giving themes that are related to music, to cultural elements, to different aspects of TikTok, and things that later will translate to TikTok too. Now, I will say it's harder to find talent that can hold both a TikTok, a minute-long video, and can actually hold a show. So we've had to be very, very creative in A, identifying the talents and working around them to create content that's a little bit different. But we aspire to create the network, the do-it-yourself network and the food network with So Yummy for the, I would say, the Gen Z and the TikTok audience. And by that, differentiate us from, you're right, a lot of available content today.
Mm-hmm. Do you see any role for interactive features where, let's say, viewers can interact with the programming or interact with the commercials outside of the programming?
Yes, but I don't see why we should limit it to only outside of the programming. From our experience, second screen has never really worked in the sense that most of our viewers are, yes, they're multitasking, but they're not multitasking with the show. I've rarely seen, maybe just in voting examples, but I've never really seen people watch a show and then on an app or on a website interact with that show. They usually are on their email, on their Facebook, on their TikTok. Yes, multitasking. Yes, double screening, but not on the same show. We think that the caveat to that is if I want to get something that I'm seeing on the show. So I really love the shirt, or I really love the ingredients for the recipe, or the products you actually need to make that new beautiful holiday decoration. So I might text because I'm already texting and interact with that. But we think there's no reason to limit it to only outside. Where what people, if they like our show, they want more. Same as we have taken the 3 minute Facebook video and transformed and increased engagement by giving you now a 30-minute show that will give you a deeper look, either into sometimes making fun of ourselves, sometimes showing TikTokers actually trying to recreate a Blossom video. You know, the Blossom videos on Facebook, they look so perfect. Can you actually do them? So we've created competitions where TikTokers are trying to recreate and making fun of ourselves. Some will do it, some won't. The next layer of engagement is actually allowing you to do this at home. Why don't you bring the ingredients home and see if you're better than the TikToker? Does that make sense?
It does, and it sort of leads me to – I was going to ask you this later, but I'll ask it now. You know, we're now in a smart TV, smart device environment. The majority of households have them. More and more of these devices, whether they are sets or they're products like Roku or Apple TV or Amazon Fire TV, et cetera, now have the ability through artificial intelligence features like Alexa, Siri, Google Assistant that's built in the set or the device allows you to use your voice as well as your remote control to control what you see or how you want to use the set. So that it raises the question, with this growing capability, why not use Alexa in the programming so that you can, you know, hey, you want to order a product or you want to, as you said, take the ingredients or the do-it-yourself instructions home, you can do that while the promo is running.
I think that's a great idea, and I think it's definitely in the future and should be included. At the end of the day, no platform stands alone. Everything is connected with the idea of offering our audience whatever they want, whenever they want. You know, First Media content, the Blossom content, is also available in gas stations. It's also available in libraries. It's also available in office buildings. You can now soon see a product, you know, a video of how to do something when you're taking the subway in New York, and you'll be able to get the ingredients in your house before the train reaches home. So it's all about connectivity, and I think you're absolutely right. You could use the commercial break and talk to Alexa and get it done, and that's where we're heading. So to me, launching the networks is an evolution. It's maybe somewhat of a revolution the way things are done, but it's an evolution of giving great content. And, you know, we start from cable. Baby First is our first child, and it started, and it's in 60 million homes on cable. And people watch today on their 52-inch screen TV, and they look at the content, and they'll take it from cable, and they'll take it from smart TVs, and they'll take it from anywhere. They just want the content that they want, and they want to engage with it.
Sharon Richter, the president of First Media, is our guest this first half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. We're talking about Blossom, the brand new network. It's available on the Roku channel via Roku, and soon will come to a smart TV set or device near you. Sharon joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour. 74 degrees at the top of the hour here in the other side of the U.S. of A., namely New York. We're delighted to have you here on Tomorrow Be Televised this Friday afternoon. You have a question or comment or meeting with Sharon, don't be shy. Make the call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We have another blockbuster 99 episode coming your way 1 week from today, and I hope you tune in because it's going to be very, very special. First up, the commissioner of the New York City Mayor's Office of Media Entertainment, Andy Castillo. In the last year, she has really brought New York City film and TV production back in a big way despite the coronavirus pandemic. We'll have her on for our first half hour to find out what the outlook is for New York City TV production and maybe some new facilities in the city to get the TV production boosting even bigger and better in 2022. We'll also ask her, are we ever going to get a New York Television Festival again? Because they were involved in previous years with that organization that unfortunately suspended their festival in 2019, and we haven't heard from them since. On the second half hour, Tyler Perry's got a new series that premiered yesterday on BET Plus, and a lot of people are talking about it. It sets forth in the world of male exotic dancing. It's called All the Queen's Men. You will meet its creator, writer, executive producer, and co-star, an interview, exclusive interview with Christian Keys in our second half hour. And our final half hour, a lot of people are buzzing about the new revival of The Wonder Years on ABC. You will meet the person responsible for it, developer and executive producer Saladin Patterson, and another InterRadio exclusive interview. Three InterRadio exclusive, back to back to back, a week from today, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific only, on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Sharon, you're with a company that is one of a bunch that's now creating more and more of these networks available on smart TV sets and smart devices. Companies like Cinedigm, Juke and Media that just got acquired through a SPAC. What do you make of this trend of this incredible growth of new networks available this way?
I think it's the perfect time because there is enough of an audience that does that on the smart TVs, and there is starting to be enough revenue to create quality content. Before, people used to look at it as I have YouTube content, I can put it on TV, except that's not how people watch. It's not what they expect, and it's not your competition, right? When you are sitting at home, you're competing with the leading new Netflix show or Apple TV show that just came up. So you have to create great content that people will actually watch. At the end of the day, a lot of people are launching networks. You know more than anybody, I think. It requires the skill of how to create long-form content that will stick and people would watch. And I wish everybody success. I think as the platforms, even though theoretically they don't have capacity, they do have capacity, many channels will also go away. And at the end, you'll stay with some good quality networks. The reason we feel we're comfortable doing this and think we've maybe cracked the code is because we come from traditional TV. So it requires both understanding of how to make long-form content that people actually will engage, understanding traditional TV, because it's not YouTube on a 52-inch screen, but also understanding the people who will watch this, which are different in a way than the people who watch traditional cable, and having the marketing and the leverage to actually drive an audience to watch. So to summarize, I think you will see a lot of networks coming because the opportunity is there. Like the cable world, the opportunity will then start narrowing because the platforms will become more selective. They already are. Channels will come and channels will go. And in 5 years, we'll have a few good channels that maybe look very different, very similar to what we're used to seeing before on cable.
And when it comes to your company, what channels can we look forward to the rest of this year and down the road? This is like at least the second channel that you've launched in a major way. So Yummy was the first through this year, Blossom Now. What's in the future, rest of this year and beyond?
So I wouldn't say the rest of this year because we like to, you know, hold hand each and every one of our babies until they can walk. And So Yummy is definitely walking now and Blossom is making its first step. But our third brand is Blusher, and that's our beauty brand. And we're looking at launching a beauty and fashion network where you could get, again, for the same generation, the Gen Zs and the TikTokers, you can get different kind of fashion and beauty content. And that excites us. With the same strategy of we'll build an audience first on all other platforms, and then we'll drive further engagement and deeper engagement on the smart TVs.
By the way, with Blossom, how are you doing so far with advertising? What kind of interest are you getting? What kind of flu is you getting from people who want to sponsor? Or at least your pitch?
We're getting great interest, I think, because when we look at what we offer, again, we mostly do it in a holistic way. We're offering you an engagement with our audience. We sometimes, like everybody else, we get advertisers who are interested in just being on the smart TV platforms, but we often get brands who are saying, we're excited about the overall offering. Again, giving you an example of something we did with Walmart in the last few months is they were interested in sponsoring a show. They were interested in working with us on organic content, which is content that is just organically on our social media pages, and using paid media to drive people to shop. And it was a really interesting for shoppable content. And it was a really unique and very successful adventure where we used similar content, but in very different platforms and with a very different message to give you ideas on how you can engage with content and later shop the ingredients that were presented. So we see more and more advertising looking at Blossom the brand and wanting to be wherever that content is and wanting to be involved within the content and advertise around the content so that they can later even actually sell a product at the end of the rainbow. And I believe personally that this is the way for us to look at the brands holistically and through all platforms with just different ways and different messages that are relevant to where you are.
Walmart is a major investor in Echo, which is an interactive service that currently is playing and now focusing, originally it was on scripted content, now it's more lifestyle content on personal computers, laptops, tablets, and smartphones.
Yes.
Have they talked to you about maybe a tie-in with Echo where they can finally put this on the television set?
We love Echo, and Echo is great, and we've worked with Walmart and with Echo. The difference, I think, between – it's an interesting thing, but the difference between potentially Echo and First Media is Echo is maybe it's similar to the AVOD proposition, but Echo is a platform that you need to get to somehow to reach the content. What we are is because we're available everywhere and on the platforms you're already on. If you're on a smart TV, you'll discover us. If you are available, if you're watching Facebook or you're in TikTok feed, you'll find Blossom. We actually, in many cases, have driven traffic to Echo and to Walmart and created content that later allows you to engage with Echo. So we love them, and we think it's a very good partnership because Echo increases the level of engagement you and I were talking about. So if you saw this amazing do-it-yourself project, a show that we actually produced with Echo allowed you to choose the ending. So if you started with one ingredient, let's just say you had a glass aquarium, you could either build a plant and and grow a plant there, or you could smash it and create an amazing art project. So it's a good combination that at the end of the day leads from content to shopping.
If anybody out from Walmart is listening, we'd like to hear from you about Echo because it's amazing that with the smart TV population the way it is, that you're not an interactive TV service. It's time. You got Samsung in your corner as investor. They have, and don't forget, Amazon is about to launch its own little television sets. So let's go, Walmart. If you hear us, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. And if you want to hear more about First Media and what it's up to, not only with this new channel, Blossom, which is now on the Roku channel on Roku, will be on other smart TV sets devices soon, So Yummy and Baby First TV, check out this web outpost, www.first.media. That's www.first.media. Blossom currently on the Roku channel. Many more smart TV sets and devices to come not too far down the road. Sharon, great to have you back again on the program. We'd love to have you anytime. It's been a pleasure all the way.
Thank you so, so much. Looking forward to connecting soon.
Absolutely. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
Sharon Richter from First Media joining us live from Los Angeles. More tomorrow will be televised coming away, but first some words to the fine folks at audible.com. A man by the name of David Goggins had a lot of training in the armed forces, including Navy SEALs training. He's put it to good use as one of the most popular endurance race people around. He's won a lot of them, and now he tells you how to do it in a wonderful book called Can't Hurt Me. It's not just about endurance in sport. It's about endurance in life, too. And you can get a wonderful one-month copy to try out for yourself when you go with Audible.com. Remember, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital and entertainment information and inspiration. There's over 200,000 titles to choose from. And you listen to them on any device, whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio, our podcast destinations, et cetera. What you got to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook like Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins, plus free health and wellness information and great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. And get this. If you're an Amazon Prime member customer, you get two audiobooks for the trial of one, including one from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. We're talking original audio productions and podcast series. Best of Broadway or Broadway Regional Theater, and great one woman and one man performances. So how about making today or this weekend the opportunity for you or someone you know to discover how Audible.com can transform the way you or they hear the world. Makes a great gift for you any time of the year or for someone you love. For all details, it's audibletrial.com/televised. Coming up our next half hour, Desert One premieres Sunday on the History Channel. The person behind it, two-time Oscar-winning filmmaker Barbara Kopple, will join me. And we'll both be joined by a very special and important guest. What you may be hearing in the next half hour may be some of the most important live radio you have heard all month long. We will have that segment for you, almost uninterrupted, after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. Connect to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together reaching over 60 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Tomorrow night, BTR is presenting a very special program, 9-11, 20 years later. It's 9-11, 20 years later. It's on tomorrow night, 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best of BTR 24-7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second half hour of this 90-minute edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Sign up with you live from New Ever York. And if you have a question or comment for our guests in the hour ahead, please give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And because of the nature of our next segment, we're going to only have one promotional pause about quarter to the hour midway through this conversation. If the world of documentary filmmaking were to ever to establish a Hall of Fame, my next guest would unquestionably be in the initial class of honorees. She's a two-time Academy Award-winning filmmaker, one of her works being the groundbreaking Harlan County, USA, which you can see regularly on Turner Classic Movies. We had her on this program 8 years ago when she did a documentary special for Lifetime called Running from Crazy about Mariel Hemingway and the Hemingway family and how they all cope with mental illness. The program received a Primetime Emmy nomination for Outstanding Documentary Special. And now she is back with a brand new special called Desert One about the unsuccessful attempt in 1980 by then-President Jimmy Carter to rescue hostages from the American Embassy in Tehran, Iran. The program premieres on Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, on the History Channel. Joining us live from New York in an interradio exclusive, Barbara Koppel. Barbara, welcome back.
Hi. I'm so happy to be back. Thank you.
And Barbara, you and I have the privilege of introducing a very honored and very special guest, and I will let you do the honors.
Okay. This is a person who is an absolutely amazing human being. His name is John Lippert. He was one of the hostages. And he was captured for 444 days. He fell in love with an Iranian woman, and he can't bring his grandchildren back or his children back to Iran, but hopes one day to. When he was let go, people asked him if he felt badly about Iran, and he said, no, I didn't. He said, I feel like they are people with great abilities and are really quite incredible as human beings. So I introduce you to John Lindbergh.
John, welcome.
Thank you, Simon, and thank you, Barbara. I love the flattery. Just keep it up.
Well, you deserve it, and there's so much more to tell about yourself.
Well, being an ambassador.
John, let's bring your life up to date. What kind of a life have you led over the past 40 years since you were one of the hostages in Iran?
I was in the U.S. Foreign Service for about 35 years, mostly in the Middle East or Africa. It was an honor really to serve my country. I retired from there and spent 12 years teaching at the U.S. Naval Academy, teaching history and political science. I love that as well. Wonderful place, wonderful group of students, wonderful group of colleagues. I retired from there about 3 years ago, and with my wife and I since then have been living in New York City. We're hoping that very soon we can enjoy much more of what this great place has to offer.
Carrie Tarmey, who is the publicist at the History Channel and Paranormal Network that set this segment up, is with us on the chat room. So, Carrie, if you have a question or comment, put in the room. We're definitely making a call at 646-652-2906. Barbara, why this subject and why now?
Well, it was actually all the kudos goes to the History Channel, who wanted to do documentaries about history. country that wasn't known very well. And one of the things on their list was Desert One. And it appealed to all of us at Cabin Creek because we really wanted to work with them and we really wanted to talk to the special operators and get to the bottom of why this mission failed, but also understand that the Desert One operation freed the hostages. Was such a selfless mission of rescue. And they just wanted to save the people because they felt it was right, not because they wanted to be heroes or anything like that. They just wanted to save their fellow Americans. And people with that much spirit and perseverance and caring were people we wanted to talk to and see who they are.
John, when Barbara invited you for an interview for this special, what was it like for you to recollect what you and all those other hostages went through for over 400 days in Iraq?
Well, Simon, when she first came and proposed the idea, I must admit I was a little reluctant to do this. There had been a number of films made, some of different qualities, and also there were other things. Just had other things going on. I was in the middle of a busy teaching schedule. But what you have to realize about Barbara is one of her great characteristics, in a different to her wonderful artistic sense, is her persistence, mm-hmm. and she doesn't give up. And she didn't, and she kept. She persuaded me to do this. I'm very happy that I did, because it tells a story that has to be told. It's a story of incredible heroism and bravery. The people on this mission, and I've had the honor of meeting them and knowing some of them in the years after, were just an incredible group of people. But most of them knew. This was an incredibly dangerous thing, and they might not survive. But they were still willing to go out and do this if there was a chance of rescuing us.
And John, what was it like being a hostage for 442 days?
Well, that was a lot of fun, Barbara. Of those 14 months, nine of them I spent in solitary. It was not a lot of fun, but it was one of the things it did, Barbara, was it said to me, if you don't follow the rules of international discourse and diplomacy, the result is anarchy in chaos, and we saw what that meant. So I came out of it much more committed to this to the career of international relations and diplomacy among nations.
Go ahead, Barbara.
I was just saying, you also had a very interesting press encounter. Would you like to talk about that at all? Absolutely charming, but really put the needle in.
I'm sorry, Barbara, I didn't catch that last part.
That you were very charming, but really put the needle in with your press encounter.
Oh well, you put that in the movie. I was very flattered, but it was just something that came up back in 1980 with the current Supreme Leader. I don't know if he remembers the encounter. But I do, and if I ever get a chance to meet him, I'll bring it up.
But what did you do? You were saying that the Iranians are so hospitable that they're not letting you go.
The Iranians have an expression, Barbara. They talk about. They say people cut off heads with cotton. he came to visit us in April of 1980, and I didn't want to berate, you know, I figured it would, there was no point in yelling at him or berating him or abusing him. So I tried to turn his own values and culture against him. And basically just the message was, what you are doing, sir, is absolutely outrageous because, you know, people may do all sorts of things, good and bad. But one thing I would have never expected from an Iranian was to mistreat a guest for whose security and well-being you're responsible. And you pride yourself in your hospitality, but keeping people captive beyond any reasonable limit is just outrageous, and it's a violation of your own deepest civilization and religious codes.
Thank you.
Barbara, the more you and your crew dug into this situation, how it happened, how this attempted rescue was implemented, how it failed, what became the most revelatory insight for you as a filmmaker into the subject, into what happened or what didn't happen?
Well, I think one of the most interesting things that we were able to encounter was being to unearth a never-before-heard audio from the mission. It was almost 40 years later, and no one had ever heard this publicly, of calls directly between the top military men who were running the mission and the people in the Carter White House, which was President Carter and Vice President Mondale. And they would call them every other day to let them know what was happening with the mission. And as things got worse and worse technically, and finally a helicopter went into a C-130 and exploded, and 8 people were killed, the mission was aborted. But that was such an insight. It was as if you were there. There was such immediacy that, you know, you wouldn't have felt possible. Also, it was a secret mission, so there was no footage of the mission. So we found this wonderful human being named Zartosh Zoltani, who grew up during that time in Iran and was now in America. And we had him do, you know, the whole mission, you know, and really studying the explanations of the people who were, you know, trying to make it all happen. And when some of the men saw it, they said, this is like almost how it happened. How in the world did you ever do that? And we just said, from you, because you really talked from your heart and talked from your expression. And not only did we want to film the American point of view, we really wanted to get the Iranian perspective, which was very important to us. And obviously we couldn't go, so we had 2 Iranian women who became the field producers over there. And they just got incredible things. I mean, one of my most incredible interviews was about a man who was 11 years old, and his bus was stopped. He went right into where everybody was in rural Iran, stopped by the American military in the midst of a secret mission happening. And he tells the story through the point of view of when he was 11. And one of the most beautiful things I found is that his reflections were so childlike and innocent. And as a boy, just like any American boy, he couldn't wait to get back to school to tell his friends about his experience.
What did your Iranian counterparts, the women that were able to get to subjects in that country, what do they tell you about what people think now, 40 years later, about what happened?
Well, they were filming them now, and many of them felt exactly the same. I mean, they were, you know, the students grown up who had taken over, you know, taken 52 people. And many of them felt that they had done the right thing, and because we were so close to the Shah, and, you know, they felt that the Shah was a puppet for America, and they didn't really change any of their opinions.
We are discussing Desert One. It is the brand new History Channel special that premieres this Sunday night, 8:30 Pacific time, about the effort that failed to rescue the Iranian hostages, the American hostages, from the American embassy in Tehran, Iran, who were held captive for more than 400 days. Barbara Koppel is the two-time Oscar-winning documentary filmmaker who produced and directed this special. She is with us live from New York, and also with us live from New York, one of the people who were held hostage for those 400-plus days, John Limbert. And they're both with us live this half hour, and an interview exclusive on tomorrow will be televised. Tom Applebaum also here with you in New York on this Friday afternoon, the day before we mark the 20th anniversary of 9/11. And if you have a question or comment with Barbara or John, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Barbara, was John one of the easier subjects to interview?
Sorry?
Was John, among the hostages that you spoke with, was John the easiest to interview? And how do you contrast his thinking with some of the other people you interviewed, some of the other hostages?
Well, John is so human, and his story is so close to the heart. And everybody really told their side of the story. I mean, we even filmed President Carter. We filmed Ted Koppel, whose news series at that time was Nightline. And they spent, you know, every single day with the Iranian hostage crisis showing updates all the time. And we asked some of the people, you know, where did you get your news from? And they said from Ted Koppel's Nightline. And it was really fun for me to film him because we both have the same last name, except he spells it E-L and I spell it Ellie. And I sort of broke the ice by telling him about I was trying to make a screen, you know, say I was going to a film screening, and they asked me, will you be Richard Ted? And I just said, no, not this time. And he seemed to enjoy that story very much.
John, with you and the other hostages, was there ever times when all of you came to the conclusion, we're not going to get rescued, we're going to be left behind, and how did you deal with that, if that came up?
Well, I can't speak for other people, Simon, but, you know, I had spoken to others, you know, since then, and I think the short answer is no. I mean, we knew we would get out. We knew we would get out eventually. The difficulty was you didn't know. You didn't know when. You know, it wasn't like being in prison where you have, you know it's 6 months or a year or however long it is. It could be another day. It could be another week. Could be another year. But I think we did know we would get out eventually. But what we also knew, almost from the second or third day, because once Ayatollah Khomeini had endorsed this thing, here he is, the leader of the country, and like a certain other leader of a country whom I won't mention, whose name I will not mention, he endorses mob rule, and so he does, once he's done that. We knew we were in for a long time, and it was going to take a while. It was going to take a while, and it wasn't until about 8 or 9 months into the thing, we didn't know this at the time, though, he basically said, okay, we've gotten everything, we've squeezed everything we can out of this, these incidents, time to finish it. So I think we had, you know, there were times when you really felt helpless. I mean, this thing just dragged on and on and on. But I think we knew that we were going to get out, and we knew that we would survive it.
Go ahead, Barbara.
Yeah, one of Kevin Permanente's mother, who really felt that he would never get out, and her son was 19. He was the youngest hostage to be taken, and she wanted to go and see him one last time. And so she made the trip to Iran, you know, under the guise of saying she wanted to understand about the human rights of Iran, and they showed her around, and they let her visit her son, unbeknownst to her son. And, you know, he was let out, and he was handcuffed and blindfolded and then brought into a room where the blindfold was taken off and his handcuffs were taken off, and he heard a rustling at the door, and in walked his mom. And he just couldn't believe it. Like, what are you doing here? Are they getting us out? What's happening? And he couldn't find out any information because everything was, you know, had little microphones on it. And all they could talk about was, you know, personal things like divorce and the family and things like that. But here was this amazing woman who got to visit her son, you know, in prison, when he was in prison as a hostage.
Barbara, how much time did you spend with family members? And what kind of feedback did you get from them about what they think of the situation 40 years later?
Well, this is what the film is about. I mean, telling their stories. But I think some of the most remarkable stories are of, you know, the families who lost their fathers and what they were going through. And what happened is there's a warrior's fund that was set up for the kids who lost their fathers, and they were able to go to college, and one became a doctor and one became a teacher, just like their father. So that was incredibly moving to hear them speak and, you know, still shed tears about the loss of their parent, but knowing also too that their lives were now full. One's a heart surgeon.
John, this special is going to be running Sunday night, and right now this country is facing a situation in Afghanistan where there is a great deal of concern that many Americans may be left behind, whether you want to call it a hostage crisis or not. Is there anything from your experience or from this documentary that could make a difference in what we're dealing with now?
I think, again, first of all, let me add my praise for Barbara's documentary. This is a remarkable bit of filmmaking, and I don't say this just because I have a small role in it. I mean, it's an amazing film, and people should watch it. And I think the appreciation that one gets, and this applies to Afghanistan, this applies to a lot of places, the people what people are willing to sacrifice in service to their country. And it's not going out and shooting a gun or blowing up a building. It's going out and saving human lives in the interest of human lives. And Barbara tells this story magnificently. And this is much of the story that we saw in Afghanistan. We see this again and again. There's tributes. We pay tributes to the people who put themselves in danger, not for some military objective, but for a humanitarian cause.
And I should point out, John, that as we speak, there are veterans of the armed forces who are at this very moment trying to get Americans out of Afghanistan and out of harm's way. Barbara, doing projects like this, keep you interested in being a documentary filmmaker? You've done so much in this genre for decades, and you've broken ground with a lot of your specials, a lot of your programs and your films, from Holland County, USA, to when you were on last 8 years ago, Running on Empty. Do things like this keep you going as a filmmaker, and if so, how?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, getting to meet all of these people, hearing their stories, bringing the film to film festivals like the Toronto Film Festivals and the National Archives showed it also, and seeing people coming together and people who may not have met before getting to know each other. And I guess a lot of my films are about people who sometimes seemingly take on impossible missions simply because they believe they're right, you know, from the strike coal miners of eastern Kentucky to, you know, the Dixie Chicks to Shelter, which was a film about homeless veterans. And I just feel so honored and so blessed to be able to do the work that I do.
Mm-hmm. And Barbara's latest work will be on the History Channel this Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. It is called Desert One. It is on the History Channel and is one you do not want to miss. Once again, it's on the History Channel this Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Check your locals for where the network is available in the area on cable and satellite. For more details about the film online, go to history.com. That is history.com. Desert One, this Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on the History Channel. Barbara, thank you very, very much for making this documentary happen and for your incredible documentary career. It's been wonderful to have you on this program, and I wish you nothing but the very, very best in whatever you do in the future.
Thank you.
And John, I hope I say this for everybody at Blog Talk Radio, speaker, and our viewers. Thank you, and all the hostages that are still with us, for your service, for your courage, for your perseverance of what you went through. Let's hope that you have a sensational rest of your lives. And thank you again for coming on. It has been an honor to have you on this program.
Thank you, Simon. My pleasure.
Yeah, mine too.
You're very, very welcome. Barbara, John, take care. All the greatest.
Okay, you too, Simon. Bye.
Same to you, Simon.
Thank you so much. Barbara Coppo, John Limber, joining us live from New York. One more time, Desert One, this Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on the History Channel. And now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. We are still looking for our third weekly winner in a row, and if you are first with the correct answer, you will win this I Love Lucy Mix and Match Magnet Set with Lucy herself, Lucille Ball. It's a lot of fun. It was put together a couple years ago by CBS, and you can get it if you know the answer to this question. On the 1960s classic television comedy He and She, what was the name of the comic strip He, played by Richard Benjamin, created? On the 1960s CBS classic comedy He and She, what was the name of the comic strip He, played by Richard Benjamin, created? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to include your name and where you're emailing from. If you're first with the correct answer, you get that gift, the I Love Lucy Mix and Match Magnet Set. If we don't get a winner by the end of the day, we will post the question tomorrow on Facebook and on Twitter. Tomorrow morning at Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in. Maybe you will be our third weekly winner in a row. We hope so. But again, you got to get through in order to make it happen. And if you do, we will get to that prize. And all the very, very best. And again, I want to thank Kerry Tarney and the people at History Channel and A&E Networks for causing that last segment of our program. Thank you, Kerry. We really appreciate it. And it was a great honor to have both Barbara and John on this program. Like I said at the beginning, very, very memorable radio. Maybe some of the most memorable radio you will hear live all month long. When we come back, we're going to change the subject, and we're going to go live to Canada, where we have the two co-creators and collaborators of a new detective drama that premiered earlier today on IMDb.tv, the Amazon Dance Support Network. It's called Pretty Hard Cases. Sherry White, Cassie Cameron will join us live from up north. And we'll also pay tribute to a pair of Michaels, the brilliant actor Michael K. Williams of The Wire fame and Michael Constantine. Remember him, the principal of Room 222, Emmy Award winner, and in recent years, that window-wiping father of My Big Fat Greek Wedding, and its CBS short-lived spinoff, My Big Fat Greek Life. We'll pay tribute to them after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tunein.com, together reaching over 60 million listeners around the world every month and growing. One more time, coming up tomorrow night, a special Blog Talk Radio presentation, 9/11, 20 years later. That's 9/11, 20 years later, tomorrow night, 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to Tomorrow Be Televised, and welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour at wherever you are. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. I'm just thinking about what an incredible last half hour we had with the people from Desert One. Barbara Koppel, the brilliant two-time Oscar-winning filmmaker and Emmy nominee, too, and John Lindbergh, one of the hostages that was held for more than 440 days in the American Embassy in Tehran, Iran, the subject of Desert One History Channel presentation, Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. If you missed that segment, remember, you can catch it on replay starting immediately after we go off the air at blogtalkradio.com/televised, and I hope you do. We have a wonderful segment ahead for you this half hour, and we invite you to be part of the program. If you just joined us, what you got to do is phone in your thoughts, questions, or feedback. It's 646-652-2906. It's 646-652-2906. Number good anyway you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio. Also, you can use our chat room, SimonApple04. My name, Kerry Tarney, is still in the room with us. So join her at SimonApple04 by name. You can find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Earlier today, IMDb.tv, this Amazon's ad-supported channel, which has been on a roll lately with original programming, got its next saga on the air. It's called Pretty Hard Cases. It comes from Canada with a very interesting team-up of women. There's also a very interesting team-up of women behind the scenes as both co-creators and showrunners. Joining us live from Newfoundland, Canada, is one of the co-creators and showrunners, Sherry White. Hello, Sherry.
Hi.
And joining us from the set in Toronto of Pretty Hard Cases, the other co-creator and showrunner we've had on the program before. She was also involved in the long-running summer series on ABC, Rookie Blue. And also, a year ago or two ago, we had her when she was doing a series with Kira Sedgwick on ABC Sunday Night called 6 Days in the Valley. We welcome back Cassie Cameron. Cassie, welcome back in.
Hi, Simon. Thanks for having us.
It is a pleasure. Sherry, we'll start with you. First of all, how did you and Cassie get together? You've had quite a collaboration for quite a while.
Yeah, well, we worked together on Rookie Blue and all of the seasons of Rookie Blue. I was one of Tassie's writers on that, and we just, you know, got over the course of those 6 seasons, we became really close and good friends, and you know, then we continued to work together on Mary Kill's People, and I worked on 10 Days in the Valley with her as well, and we produced a show together called Little Dog. So we've just been working together for a long time, and it just seemed like it made perfect sense for us to create another cop show together.
And, Cassie, I remember Mary Kills. I think we had you on the show when you did Mary Kills People. It was a wonderfully underrated show, another great classic that I'm happy to say found both a worldwide audience as well as a Canadian audience. How long did it take for you and Sherry to develop Pretty Hard Cases? This is a very interesting spin on the female detective genre.
Well, we had the idea, and we went into CBC fairly soon after. We just sort of said we would love to make a fun, entertaining, funny cop show about women in their 40s. You know, we'd done Rookie Blue together, which was, you know, that's sort of a similar vibe, but with kids in their 20s, and we've gotten older, sadly, and we thought there's nobody funnier than women in their 40s, in our opinion, and we just wanted to kind of explore a dynamic between two friends, the way that Sherry and I are friends and are very, very different from each other. And so we went in with that fairly loose idea to CBC and said, we want to write this for you guys. And we were very grateful when they said, let's develop it. So we went off and wrote the pilot.
And by the way, Tessie, I sit corrected about how many days in the valley Kira Sedgwick spent. It was 10 days, not 6 days. So thank you.
Killing it. We flew by so fast.
That's right.
Sherry, one of the things about this program, the Premier Girlie Today on IMDb, is the casting. It seems you have two people from opposite ends of the spectrum, and when I saw the trailer for this, boy, it's like they click. You've got one of the co-stars of Orange is the New Black. You've got also a wonderful talent as well from, the Baroness von Sketch Show. I imagine you remember that show on IFC. How were you and Kathy able to find these two and pair them up?
Well, the amazing thing is they were, both of them were our first ideas. Meredith, we loved her from Baroness von Sketch, and we knew we wanted them to be sort of funny. And we knew that we were casting another character, the other character we knew we were going to cast somebody out of the U.S., and we were searching around before we saw auditions, before we talked to a casting director. We were just Googling and looking at people, and I found an interview with Adrienne Moore on some show, and I remember sending that clip to Tass going, this is her. And Tassie totally agreed. And then when we had auditions come in, Adrienne was there, and she just blew everybody else out of the water. Like, she was just so amazing. And so we just were lucky to get them.
And we brought them up we brought Adrienne up for a chemistry test with Meredith. And it was like they were separated at birth. Like, they clicked instantly. They couldn't stop laughing. They were like two little kids. And it was just gold, like right from the very minute the two of them stepped foot in the same room together.
And Cassie, it also seems that you not only bring two personalities together, but you also have them clash by being from different worlds of the same order, if you will, of police work. One is involved with the whole gang situation, one is involved with drugs, and it seems that, you know, it would be something like you would think would come together easily, but in fact, you find a very funny clash that takes place starting with the opening episode.
Yeah, we wanted to, because of the tone of the show, which is lighter than many, many cop shows, we wanted our people in a world that wasn't going to always have a dead body in it. So we knew that we wanted our characters in, you know, a high stakes, but not incredibly heartbreaking world. We have a lot of consultants, police consultants that we've worked with, and the guns and gangs people and the drug squad people, they have very different personas, very different styles, but their work intersects so much, and they're very, very competitive, those two divisions. Mm-hmm. And so we thought, wouldn't it be fun if these two women were each in one of those divisions, have totally different approaches to getting the same bad guys. And, you know, on top of that, that Kelly is more of a serve and protect. She has a serve and protect approach to policing, whereas Sam is more of a law and order rule follower type. And those two kind of different facets of how to police seemed like very interesting elements to add to their characters.
Mm-hmm. And Sherry, did you also check in with, let's say, psychologists about, you know, the psychology here, how policemen behave when they're dealing with a different, you know, how do they strategize dealing with this crime, or how do they strategize dealing with this situation, particularly situations that you got to resolve in a split second?
We didn't really talk to psychologists. We did speak to lots of cops. We have lots of cop consultants. We also have some, you know, consultants on the show that are ex-gang members. We did have some consultation sessions with community leaders. So we tried to kind of get a bigger, wider picture of policing and the impact it has on communities and the challenges that they are faced on both sides. So we tried to get a well-rounded look at everything, and we spoke to lots of different consultants, cop consultants too, and everybody gives a different perspective, which is great.
Mernie McNeil from the Baroness von Sketch Show and Adrienne Seymour from Orange New Black, co-star in Pretty Hard Cases, now available on imdb.tv. that's the ad-supported service available on smart TV sets and smart devices from Amazon. And we have the two co-creators and showrunners of the program, with us live this half hour, and tomorrow we'll be televised from Newfoundland, Canada, Sherry White, and on the set of Pretty Hard Cases in Toronto, a wonderful city, by the way. So is Newfoundland, a wonderful area of Canada. Cassie Cameron. And if you want to talk to both of them, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming your way Monday on Tomorrow We Televised, we'll bring you another return guest, Patrick Dewey. He is the executive producer of Nailed It, the very popular competition series on Netflix hosted by Nicole Byer, and it's going into its sixth season next week. And then next Friday, you do not want to miss this one. It's another blockbuster 90-minute edition for you. We lead off with Anda Castillo. She is the commissioner of the New York City Mayor's Office of Media Entertainment. We'll get the latest scoop from her about the comeback of New York TV production in the face of the coronavirus pandemic. And will there be a New York Television Festival again? We'll ask you about that, too. Then, from the brand-new Tyler Perry series that just premiered on BET+, All the Queen's Men, creator, writer, executive producer, and co-star, Christian Keys. And finally, from the new ABC revival of The Wonder Years that premieres later this month, an exclusive interview with developer and executive producer Saladin Patterson. And if you haven't seen the clips from The Wonder Years, there's a lot of buzz about that show. I think it's going to be a winner, especially when people like Jewel Hill and Don Cheadle providing the narration, and Fred Savage, the original star of The Wonder Years, directing the opening episode. It's all coming up next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Cassie, what's the point, or what key point did you want to make about being a policewoman in your 40s?
Well, I mean, I think that what we were trying to lean into with these characters is this sense of being at the top of your game career-wise, very successful, very hardworking, and suddenly looking up and going, is this all there is? What about my personal life that I have neglected in favor of my career for so long? Like, I'm lonely. My life is a disaster. Not, of course, that Sherry and I feel any of those things, but, I think it's a relatable thing that a lot of women, you know, over 40 are kind of looking around going, oh, wow, I have a great career, but I'm divorced, or I never had a baby, or I, you know. So we were sort of leaning into that commonality between these two characters and the humor that you can find in that. And at the same time, you know, we were starting development right when the pandemic hit. We had to postpone shooting for 3 months. And during that 3 months was, you know, the defund the police movement, George Floyd. We really had to kind of work with those issues into our stories and also try and stay an entertaining show. So, you know, there was a lot to juggle for us, and I'm really proud of how we did it, actually.
Sherry, do you and Cassie bring those themes in immediately, or did you have to do it, let's say, episode 3, 4, 5 later on?
Do we bring what in?
Themes about dealing with the coronavirus pandemic, dealing with social justice, the aftermath of situations like the George Floyd situation, and so forth.
Oh, yeah, no, we brought that in right away. It was really, it's funny because we set out to make a sort of, you know, female action comedy series in a way, or comedy drama series. And, you know, we tried to be very conscientious. We'd cast, you know, Adrian and Meredith, so obviously right away we knew that we were dealing with an African-American woman and a white woman working together from different perspectives. But the George Floyd movement made us look at everything quite differently. So when you think of action movies or action series, well, so much of that is actually police brutality. You know, like, we had to look at it and really, really question all these badass women, you know, scenes we were writing and going, actually, that's not how a cop should be. That's not how a cop should approach. So it did change how we wrote the show in a way that that we were able to catch and adjust before we even started filming, which is great. And I think that the show is much better for it.
Cassie, how do you and Sherry collaborate, both on a day-to-day and on a full series level? I mean, do you sort of separate who has what accountability? Like, Sherry, you'll write this character in this episode, or you'll write this plot line. or this arc of a situation, or Sherry does, you work with the cinematographer more, you work with the writer's room more, and Tassie, you work with the production to make sure the set is okay, and you're dealing with ongoing COVID situations. How do you work the collaboration out?
We don't separate, we don't divide and conquer in quite that way. I think that we try really hard. You know, the most important thing, we say this all the time, I've probably said it on your show, is that our scripts and casting. And so that those are our primary concerns. And until a script, until Sherry's happy with the script and until I'm happy with the script, we don't want to move forward, and same with cast. But we talk basically 8,000 times a day on the phone or we Zoom. If she can handle a meeting and I can't, she does it, vice versa. We 99% of the time have the same opinion on a, you know, a prop or a wardrobe or a choices. And so we just juggle stuff back and forth and focus on the, you know, the scripts and the casting and everything else that comes along. I mean, Cher, would you say that's accurate? We don't really.
I mean, we don't have any. We divide and conquer sometimes, but that the roles can switch. You know, like I might be focused on script today. Tass will be focused on production. You know, next day we might be switching that up, or one of us will be in post. Or we, Amy Cameron, who's the executive producer, also does a lot of post and juggling set stuff. So we have lots of, you know, great support from the other writers, the other EPs, who help us get all that done, because, you know, there's never enough time to do it all. So, but yeah, I think we juggle it well.
Mm-hmm. Amy is also my
sister,
Sherry, by the way.
As co-showrunners, how do you and Tassie manage a writer's room?
We manage the writer's room. You know, we try to come in with the sort of the general arc and figure out where we're going. And, you know, we just take it a bite at a time. And, of course, COVID changed everything because it moved us onto Zoom. It used to be that we would all be in a room together, and then we started working over Zoom, and then we started doing a lot more independent work, a lot more, you know, two people working together and over email and stuff. But generally, it's, you know, we will have an instinct of the general shape, the big picture story, and, you know, we'll task the writing department to run with it while we take care of other things, and then we come back and they pitch, and, you know, it's just an ongoing process like that.
But it was, mm-hmm. Sherry's right, it was really weird with COVID, because we were in a big room with, I don't know, 8 writers on Friday, March 13th, and we said goodbye for the end of the week, and then never went back. And it was like Pompeii. It's like my shoes are still there at the office. Like it, anyway, it's very strange. And then we were trying to do Zoom. So it was all virtual, but you can't Zoom 8 hours a day. Like it's just, you just can't do it. So it really changed how we approached the writing room and did become much more independent work.
Yeah. You know, Tassie, in 14-plus years of doing this program, one of the things that is very striking about the role of Canada and Canadian producers, writers, directors in television is how they have really put their own spin on certain genres of television, especially the police procedural, whether it's a show like Rookie Blue, this program, Flashpoint, which I think has ended up being one of the most underrated police shows of its kind. I was thrilled that we had Mark Stern, Stephanie Morgenstern, the executive producer of that show. I'm thrilled that it won a major awards in Canada and had a great 4 or 5 year run here in the United States, first on CBS and I on television, and on and on and on. Private Eye with Jason Priestley. What is it about the inventiveness of people in your side of the border in your industry that gives these kinds of unique spins on the police procedural some wonderful life?
Such an excellent question. And, I mean, I worked on the first season of Flashpoint. I was the showrunner the first season. I didn't create it, but and I remember on that show it was looking at the very, very human side of policing with a certain degree of humility that I hesitate to say might be a bit Canadian, you know, that there's a kind of, we don't always think we're right. We don't think we're a superpower. We know we're not in a way, and that we have to kind of come at everything from a slightly different angle. And we do. I think that Canada, I mean, we have our atrocities and our shameful stuff up here as every country does, but you know, there is a kind of slightly more left-wing vibe to our country, and I think that kind of leaks into our television shows about policing, where it's not just kind of Rambo action heroes. It's people who are actually questioning themselves, questioning the system. Can we make it better? There's a certain. I don't know. It's a very hard thing to put.
I think humility.
Humility,
yeah, is the right word. Yeah, I think it.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that. I mean, I also think Canadians, for whatever reason, are very, very funny, and that mm-hmm. kind of light touch also infuses a lot of these shows. Certainly, Private Eyes and Rookie, and you know that we are seem to be able to blend a sense of humor and lightness with the drama.
Yeah, there's sort of that. This is for both of you. There's sort of balance of dealing with the job at hand in a balanced way, and also being willing to, like, how far do you go as a person to deal with a situation? And for those who think this is like something that's been discovered in Canadian television in the last couple of decades, I'd like you to point out to a wonderful series that some episodes running on YouTube from the 1960s called Wojak, with a terrific actor named John Byrne, who plays a coroner. And that show was a groundbreaker for Canadian television because it dealt with the human side of what is it like to deal with these crimes from such an unusual standpoint. And you can see some of the episodes now on YouTube, and they are stunning. They were talking about early 1960s television. And it really was, and frankly, it really set the mood for a lot of U.S. shows also.
That's really interesting. I haven't seen it. You know, it's funny, too, Simon, when you were talking, I realized that there also may be something born out of the practicalities of having lower budgets, that you have to, your writing has to be really, really special because you don't have the money to do massive stunts and so you have to make choices that are character-based. You have to make your dialogue really thing because all those of us who've been in the Canadian industry for a long time, it's changing. Our budgets are getting much bigger. But, you know, you have to – I remember on Rookie Blue, we couldn't afford to do a car chase. So we ended up doing, you know, a sex worker who couldn't drive standard in her car, and the cops were running along beside the car because that as the car sputtered around, like you come up with these slightly more inventive approaches to things because in some cases you just can't compete with the huge budgets of American shows.
Sherry, only got about a minute so left. What are some of the upcoming cases that our Detective Pair going to deal with?
Oh gosh. Well, in season one, we have, we're zeroing in on a gang called the Stockwoods, and so many episodes has something to do with those with that street gang, which is sort of a neighborhood gang, eclectic group of people, we got some drug busts happening at the Burger Buckets and all kinds of
Tara Strong. The amazing Tara Strong plays one of our sort of antagonists in the first season, and she's just incredible. So mm-hmm. she's, I don't know if you know her, but she's the voice of basically every cartoon character in the world. and also a remarkable actor.
The program is Pretty Hard Cases, and you can now see episodes on imdb.tv starting today. And it's available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices. For more details about the program online and the network, too, here's where you go, www.amazon.com/imdb.tv. That's www.amazon.com/imdb.tv. Pretty Hard Cases, it started earlier today. and hopefully we'll have a great, great long run. Sherry White, Tassie Cameron, thank you both for coming on. Congratulations on your new collaboration, and hopefully, like I said, a long run store for viewers on both sides of the border, and we'd love to have you back on anytime.
Thank you
Simon,
so much.
Thanks so much. Thanks, really great. Yeah, great to talk
You're
to
welcome,
you.
You're welcome, Sherry and Tassie. Take care. Enjoy the weekend.
You too.
Thanks. You too. Bye-bye.
Sherry White, Tassie Cameron, joining us live from Canada. This half hour on Tomorrow will be televised. This week, we lost two wonderful talents, both of whom share the first name, Michael. Michael K. Williams, in his 50s. He may have died from a drug overdose here in New York City. Many of you know him for an incredible performance as one of the co-stars of what I consider one of the great television series of all time, The Wire on HBO. But he had a gallery of characters to deal with over the course of his long career. Shows from Community to Boardwalk Empire, and more recently, Lovecraft Country, where he was up at the time of his passing for an Emmy Award for Best Supporting Actor for that series. A lot of people think he's going to get it in a couple weeks. Michael was a tremendous actor who overcame tremendous personal hardship to do what he did and did it very well. When you saw a TV series with him aboard, you knew you were going to get a very unique performance, something very different from the norm. And he delivered over and over and over again. The other Michael who left us in his 90s was Michael Constantine. If you remember back in the late 1960s or 1970s, he was the co-star, an Emmy-winning co-star in the first season of Room 222, one of the most influential dramas about education ever, put together by James Brooks, Gene Reynolds, and a wonderful production team, and with a tremendous cast led by Lloyd Haynes, Denise Nicholas, Constantine, and Karen Valentine. The show was a groundbreaker, one of the first shows to integrate students from all walks of life in a Los Angeles high school and deal honestly and in a dramedy way with the issues that they were dealing with. And then, of course, Michael had his great movie role as co-star of My Big Fat Greek Wedding, playing that window-wiping father. He loved that role. He had a chance to do it also in My Big Fat Greek Life, short-lived CBS spinoff of that show. Michael K. Williams, Michael Constantine, both passed away this week. I want to thank all of our guests for an incredible 90 minutes. And I want to thank you all for joining us as well. Be with us on Monday with Patrick J. Duhi from Nailed It on Netflix. And next Friday, Anna Castillo from the New York City Mayor's Office of Media Entertainment, Christian Keys from All the Queen's Men, and Saladin Patterson from ABC's The Wonder Years remake. Don't forget, you can check up on our show if you came in late at www.blogsway.com/televised. Check out our show on podcast and our website, tomorrowbetelevised.podsite.io. Tomorrow Be Televised was brought today by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For a free notebook or two, much more, audibletrial.com/televised. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a tremendous weekend. And tomorrow, please take time to remember and honor the thousands of people who passed from bombings in the World Trade Center here in New York, in the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., and the landing of an airplane, a crash landing in space in Pennsylvania. They should be remembered, and we should never forget. We have a lot to learn still as a country from what took place 20 years ago tomorrow. Maybe the best thing to learn is it's time once again to come together as a nation, and as that U2 song from Spider-Man says, rise above. We'll be back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. You know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, all of our podcast destinations as well. Whatever you do this weekend, please be safe and great about it. And if you need to get vaccinated or if you haven't been vaccinated yet, please see a doctor, get your medical records in check, get a second opinion, and then make a great choice. And once again, let's never forget what happened 20 years ago tomorrow. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.